So in 25 minutes less, we have to get through a complicated tea. No problem.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate it.
Okay. So last time we spoke about sharing, about how when you try to become a unit with someone you want to have a relationship with, your future wife, other people that you want to have a relationship with, so you want to become one. So we discussed three steps of how to share, right? Share your own life, your own feelings, your own emotion, to let the other person feel a partner in your successes. And the third level was to get the other person, to allow the other person to share. And you listen to them, even though you might not be interested, but to let them share and in a genuine way, and to be there and participating in a genuine way. Okay. As you achieve a unit, a big problem comes up. And that is, what happens if you have a growth experience? Okay? Meaning, yes, I could share my day, I could share my emotion, so that allows us to connect, to become one, right? But now I'm changing. Now I was inspired to be more careful with my Shmiras HaLashon. I became inspired to be more sensitive to elderly people. I want to be involved more in Chesed. I want to do more Hechnasas Orchim. So something in my life changed, right? And now, if I'm one with someone else, so the other person has to change with me, right? If one of your arms start to grow and the other arm doesn't, you're deformed, right? So what happens in this unit that you're trying to create, and maybe you've already created, and now one aspect starts to change and the other one needs to move with it? How do you influence another person in the best way? So, most people, their first reaction in how to influence others is through criticism. Right? I know something is better. I know that I'm right about something. Sometimes this comes up in yeshiva. You have like a religious experience, right? And you see other people not doing it the way that you think it should be done. So you make sure you let them know that. Of course, you have all your intentions, l'shem shemayim, and right, nothing else is really in the way. So criticism is usually the first thing that people go for. Criticism is the last thing that you should ever do, and it's the worst thing that you could do in any relationship. Okay? To the extent that when I originally wrote the Kunshas that I told you about from Rav Yaakov Friedman, and we had, there's a section there about criticism, so it really fit in at an earlier part of the Kunshas, and he said, well, we're going to put it all the way at the end because no one should ever think it's really a possibility. I mean, it's all the way at the end. It's like the last thing that we'll get to. Okay, so I'd like to speak about a few other areas, other ways of influence. Okay, this is not just in marriage. This is in any relationship that you want to try to influence others. It could be a Rebbe Talmud. That you're teaching someone what is the correct way, the best way to influence. And then, at the very end, we're going to have to do this very, very quickly because we're going to have to get through a lot right now. But at the very end, we're going to discuss if you have to, for some reason, criticize. So what is the right way to go ahead and do it? Okay? So here we go. The first way to influence, and this is crucial. If you don't have this, it's not like there's another way. If you don't have this, forget it. There's nothing to talk about. And that is based on a Gemara in Maseches Baba Basra and Daf Samach. Okay, the Gemara tells a story about Rav Yanai, that someone came before Rav Yanai and he came for a halachic ruling. What was the psak that he needed to ask about? This guy had a tree in his backyard. It was there for years. And the tree hung over the backyard into the public domain, into the Rosh HaSarala. Okay? And the people started asking him that they don't want a tree hanging over their Rishus HaRabim. You know, you're walking down the street, you want to be able to look up to the stars, you want to be able to, I don't know, you want to get a suntan. You don't want a tree hanging over. So the guy wanted to know, does he have to cut down the trees? On one hand, it's in his Rishus, it's in his backyard. It's been there for a long time. Do I have to cut it down or not? So he came to Rav Yanai and he told him the story, and Rav Yanai said, look, come back tomorrow and I'll give you a psak. Okay. The guy walks out. Rav Yanai calls over his own servant and he says, look, you know that tree that I have in my backyard? Go cut it down. So the guy went to cut down Rav Yanai's tree, came back, everything is done. The next day the guy comes back, the original guy, and he says, okay, so what's the halacha? Do I have to cut down my tree or not? So Rav Yanai says, halacha is you have to cut down your tree because it's bothering the Rishus HaRab and the people walking in the public domain. So he said, oh, but Rav Yanai, you have a tree. So he says, no, go look. If I have a tree, then you're right, you don't have to cut yours down. If I don't have a tree, then you have to go ahead and cut yours down. That's the story of the Gemara. Obviously, he looked, he saw there was no tree there, and he cut his down. So the Gemara asks, Meikara Maikasara, what's going on here? What did Rav Yane think originally? If Rav Yane held that you had to cut down the tree, so just, first of all, you should have cut down his tree a long time ago. And then we'll just tell him to cut the tree. What exactly was going on over here? So the Gemara says that originally Rav Yane thought that people enjoyed the tree, gave them shade. So he thought he was doing them a favor, the fact that his tree in his backyard was hanging over. When he heard that the people in the Shizah Rabban were complaining to this guy, he realized that it wasn't, and therefore he had to cut it down. So the Gemara says, okay, so why don't you just tell him to cut it down right away? Why do you have to make this whole thing? Come back tomorrow, and then you go ahead and cut your thing. So the Gemara says, because he knew that if he didn't cut his own tree down first, he would never be able to influence the guy to follow his psak to go ahead and cut his tree. Meaning, the Gemara is teaching us a very, very important thing. Very important, you sowed in leadership and in influence. And that is that your actions speak louder than your words. At the end of the day, no one is going to follow you or listen to you to the extent that you want them to if you're not acting the same exact way. So if you are more sensitive about your shmiras halashon, you don't want to speak lashon hara, you don't like making certain jokes, whatever it is, you want to be more careful about that. It's not enough for you to let everyone else know, please don't speak lashon hara around me. Right? Please don't make jokes about certain things around me. That's not going to be enough. You have to act that way. If you're acting yourself that way, then you could also influence other people to act that way as well. If you're not going to wake up early in the morning to get to shul, then it's not going to happen that you're going to tell your wife, oh, yeah, it's really important to get up early, it's really important to get up early, you're going to talk about it all the time, it's really important to get up early, really important to get up early, and then you're not going to wake up early. It's not going to happen. You're not going to get your kids to wake up early if you don't wake up early. You're not going to get your wife to wake up early if you're not going to wake up early. But if you show that every morning you wake up at 5 o'clock and that's when you start doing whatever you're doing, so then you could talk about the value of waking up early. If you want the value of learning Torah to be part of your home. So if you're going to go ahead and learn Torah, so then your wife will be into it. If you want to ask her, you know, on Thanksgiving Day, look, there's no work that day. I'd like to go, there's a Yom Iyun in the shul. I'd like to go spend 4 hours learning. So if the whole year you wake up early or at night, you know, even though you're falling asleep, you make sure you have a Seder. So then if you want an extra Thursday, an extra Sunday to learn more, it's going to happen because it's real by you. But if you say, Torah is so important. If you don't show that Torah is so important, then the one time that you want extra learning, it's never going to happen. Okay? The most important, that is the first step and is crucial. You always have to be living by what you're trying to preach. Again, you don't always have to be perfect. Right? We all have our faults, and you might not wake up early one time, or you might fall asleep at night one time and miss your chavrusa. Right? That's true. But if you're consistently showing and acting a certain way, then any value that you want to show and give over will be much more accepted by the people listening. Okay? So that's the first step. Very important.
Where is that Gemara? Under
Rufyana? Baba Basra, Daf Samach. Amud Aleph, and goes on to Amud Beis. Okay. The second step of influencing another person is as follows. This is based on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, and Daf Chav Gimel Amud Beis. Okay, the Gemara says that 23b. The Gemara says that the Beis Din would interrogate the witnesses that saw the new moon in order to be Mekadesh Chodesh to say that it's Rosh Chodesh. So they ask them all these different questions. So the Gemara says that if the witnesses would ever say that the concave, that's the missing part, of the moon, right, was facing the sun, S-U-N, then you would know that they're lying. That was a way of knowing that you're lying. Why? So the Gemara says, because me'olam, forever, the sun never saw the pigima, that's a key word, the pigima, the missing part of the moon. Why? Because the moon would be embarrassed. That's what the Gemara says. Okay? So the Slonim HaRebbe, the Nesiv HaShalom, he asked the following question. What a weird term of the Gemara. I mean, first of all, we all know that the reason the sun never saw the concave part of the moon is because the moon is a reflection of the sun, right? So the missing part of the moon can't be facing the sun because the sun is sending its rays. If anything, that's the part that you do see, right? The missing part over here, right, cannot be facing the sun. It's impossible. So the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says because the la'olam, forever, the sun never looked at the pigima. Pigima is the Hebrew word for something that's lacking, but it's not really the word for missing. Something that's missing is chaser. Pigima has a negative connotation. right?
You want to know? Blemish, right?
It's like a blemish. It really means what's missing, what's lacking in the person. So like it would be like a bad midah. What's this pagam? You know, pagam mishpacha means you have a bad lineage. Right? It's bad. It's a negative connotation of the word missing. So why did Gemara use that negative connotation, pigima? And two, what does it mean? Because the moon would be embarrassed. What's flying over here? Right? So the Nesi Shalom said a beautiful idea. And later, I heard this from Rabbi Yaakov Friedman, who heard it at Tish once. But later I saw it in Parshas Chukas, in Nesi Shalom, he brings this down. If you want to look it up, it's on page 122 and 123. Okay, and he says as follows. He says, the Gemara is coming to hint to us a very important rule about influencing. And that is as follows. The sun is the influencer. The moon is that which is influenced, right? The sun is giving off the rays, the sun receives it, right? It says as follows. If the one who's trying to influence ever looks at the person he's trying to influence, right, as having innate problems, innate pigima, innate deficiencies, that's what I wanted, then you'll never be successful because the person's going to be embarrassed. Meaning, I want to go ahead and I want to influence. If I hold that you, your essence, is one who speaks horribly, you have a disgusting way of speech, that's who you are. So then I could talk from today to tomorrow about Lashon Hara and Lashon Nekiya and special speech and polished speech. It'll never work. Because you know that I think that you're a rotten person. The only way another person is ever able, any of us, are able to be influenced by anyone, is if we feel that the person sees us as innately good. Yes, we made a mistake. We said something that was inappropriate. That's not us. That's our external being. Right? Like we say in Shir HaShirim, Bnei Yisrael say, Shechora ani v'nava. I'm dark, but I am beautiful. It's all a sunburn, right? You look at the person's skin, it looks darker than usual. So, what is that? So, Klausel say, Hashem, that's not me. It's a sunburn. Peel off the sunburn underneath. That's who I really am. We really are, there's something we believe very, very much. The Tomer Devarah speaks about this in the beginning. That Klal Yisrael, we are all pure, perfect neshamos. No blemish, no sins, nothing. All the chatayim, everything that we do, is our physical body on the outside that did that. Yes, and we cause barriers between us and Hashem, we have to get rid of those barriers, but internally, our essence is pure kadosh, pure kedusha. We have to look at other people that way. When you look at other person that way, so then you're able to influence them. Why is that? So it's for three reasons. Okay, one, is, let's say I'm the one being influenced, to make it easier. Okay, in order for me to learn from you, right, I have to trust you. I'm not gonna let you mold me if I don't trust you. But I can't trust you if I don't feel safe enough to share emotions, experiences. Right? I only can have security with you if you appreciate me. If I feel that you think I'm this piece of garbage, no matter who you are, I'm never going to be able to put myself into your hands and allow you to mold me. Just not going to be able to open up, not going to be able to let it happen. So the first step is from the one being influenced, he needs to feel that he could trust you. The only way he could do that is if he feels that you see the good in him. Two, in order for me to grow, yes, maybe I do have a problem with my speech, and I got to work on it, right? That's going to be a challenge. It's obviously not easy. It's not natural to me. The only way that I'm going to be able to grow through those challenges is if I feel like you believe in me. Because I see myself through the eyes of the one who is influencing me. So if I see that you think that I'm good, then that would give me koach. That's going to give me the energy to push forward. He believes in me. He thinks I could do it. And that's why sometimes you walk out of a schmooze as a motivational speaker, and he's telling you how you're amazing, and you could, right? And then you walk out, oh, I could do it. But nothing really happened, right? But someone else believed in you, and then gives you the energy. A lot of times we feel about ourselves the way others perceive us. And therefore, if the other person is trying to influence us, tells us, yeah, you could do it. This is easy. You for sure could do it. I know you could do it. I've seen you other times. And so all of a sudden, he said, oh yeah, I could do it. So I could be more careful about my speech. I could push myself to learn more. I could push myself to stay up later. I could push myself to wake up earlier. I could push myself to do other things that I didn't think I could do. So that's the two reasons from the side of the one influencing why it has to be that he sees that you are good. And then the third is from the influencer himself. If you don't believe... Whoa. Okay? Okay. If you don't believe that the person could do it, you're not really going to invest in it. Right? If you feel that this guy... It's not worth it. How am I going to really change this guy? Okay, I'll give my Dvar Torah, I'll give my speech, and I'll give my Rara. But at the end of the day, it's not for you. It's for the other guy. Right? So if I don't believe in you, I'm not going to invest in you. But if I feel that you're a pure neshama, and you have tremendous potential, and you could go ahead and break through certain challenges, so then I'm going to keep on pushing, even though it might require another time I have to teach this to you, and then another time I'll do it again and again. I'll do it. Why? Because I don't think you can do it. If I don't think you can do it, so I won't be able to give it all in the sincere, proper way in order to influence you. Okay, so those are the three reasons why it's so crucial to see the good in the other person. Now, this is not for now, but this is really the key to have any bracha in your life. Okay, the key to have bracha in your life is by seeing other people as good. If you see, this is the Talmud Dvar writes, if you see that other people are good, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at you as good. And then you become a funnel for bracha into this world. Okay, that's for another time how that works. We're going to have to hold off for now. Okay, that is step two, to make sure you look at the other person as completely good. And you got to work on that sometimes. Right? Maybe you're upset that he went ahead and did something wrong. You got to try to push that aside and try to focus in on the essence of the person, and then be able to go ahead and influence. Okay. Three. Oh boy. Okay. When it comes to a husband and a wife influencing each other, okay, there's a certain dynamic which is important. And that is, the Zohar writes a few times that the husband is like the sun, S-U-N, and the wife is like the moon. Which means that the husband is the one influencing, but the wife is the one being influenced. Now, every good Jewish girl in seminary knows that the Gemara says the exact opposite. How's that? Because the Gemara talks about Eishes Korach and Eishes Own Ben Peles, right? That Korach was about to pull out of the argument with Moshe, and she pushed him in. And Own was going to go and follow Korach, and his wife said, "Look, what do you have to gain anyway? Even if you win, Korach's going to be the head, and if you lose, Moshe's going to be the head. So what's the difference? Might as well not do anything, right?" So it sounds like, and the Gemara says, "Chachmas nashim bansa besa." From there, a pasuk that shows the women have a chachma. So you see that the woman is really the one that's going to push you to do good things. So how do you resolve this seeming contradiction? On one end, the Zohar talks about the man being the influencer, and the Gemara sounds like the woman's the influencer. How do you resolve it? So the answer is, like Berger would always say, both, right? It's both.
Like, who would it always say?
Rabbi Berger. Rabbi Mati Berger.
I didn't have him enough
to know. Okay, fine. Everything is both, okay? So how does this work? So if Nassim Machtfogel explained as follows, and he had a bunch of Maamar Komos for this. I'm not going to have time to go into it now, but he said as follows. He said that the husband has the ability to bring things into the marriage. It could be the Yerushalayim, the Torah learning, certain values, right? You're sitting at the Shabbos table, and you tell a story, you tell a Dvar Torah, whatever it is that you want to bring a certain value into the home. Now, men are very volatile. Sometimes you're feeling good about this, and the next day, you're not so strong about this, right? One day, davening is the most important thing in the world, and the next day, you're a little bit tired and need a break, right? That's what men are like. Women aren't like that. Women are very strong, and they're able to keep things on a very consistent basis. They're growth-oriented, 100%, but they're able to keep it consistent, not like men. So what happens is as follows. When you bring in a value into the home, so that's going to get soaked up by your wife. Okay, again, assuming that you're doing it in the right way, like you said, through leadership, acting on it first, to, you know, seeing the good. You're able to bring a value in, and she's going to take it in. And then, at a time that you're not 100% chazak, she's going to say, "No, you got to get up. Got to go to shul, minyan. Go for it." Meaning she reflects back that which you influenced in. Okay? That's a very, very important dynamic, which is crucial. No one should ever get married to anyone thinking you're going to change your wife. That's the worst thing in the world that you could do. Okay? Because if it doesn't happen, it's going to cause lots of issues. Okay? You don't go in saying, well, I'm going to change her. That's bad. You want to grow with her. Okay? And both of you should be growth-oriented, and then you'll be able to grow together. New experiences will be able to be influenced one on the other. But when you bring something into the home, and this is something that should motivate men to try to bring in these values and to try to share these things, because it could come back to help you, you know, even on a selfish level, it'll come back to help you later on. But that's the way it works. It's you could bring in, and she holds it in a much stronger way and brings it back. And that, Rothvogel explains, that's what happened when it came to Korach. Korach spoke about all the time about, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, well, he's going for the Srara, you know, he wants to be in charge, and it's not real, and yelling. All of a sudden, he chickens out last minute. You know, he's not sure he wants to do it anymore. And his wife says, no, you can do it, go for it, right? Same thing with Owen. Owen used to always speak about how, you know, what's the point of Machlokas? You never really win anyway at the end of the day. It's not good for us. And then all of a sudden, Korach's riling up the troops, and Owen's going to go for it. And she says, look, you know, last Shabbos, he spoke about the beautiful story about what's it worth. You know, she was able to go back and hold Owen back from what he was going to do. And that's what it means. Chachmas Nashim Bansa Besa, that the Chachma, the wisdom of the women, they build the house, they're the foundation of the home, because they're able to hold it all strong. They're able to hold all of those elements that came into building the home, they're able to hold it strong and stark, and then influence back over. Okay. Now, with 2 minutes left, we're gonna move over to the criticism. Even though this really requires a whole other schmooze. So we said, again, criticism is the worst thing you could ever do. It's only destructive. Especially in a marriage. Okay, especially in a marriage, it could destroy your wife. Why? Because why specifically, this is everyone really, there was a very fascinating study done in Harvard about, they looked at people's brain while they were being criticized. And every defense mechanism that exists, you go ahead and put up. No one likes to be criticized. No one. And the second you hear, all of a sudden, the first reaction anyone ever has is defense mechanism. But specifically with a wife who always is craving for her husband's attention and love, we spoke about that the first session that we had about always acknowledging, recognizing what's going on with your wife, even not complimenting, just recognizing that she had a hard day. She's looking for you to notice her. That is the key. So if you go ahead and you criticize her, that's like killing, like hitting the place of energy in the relationship. The whole energy of the relationship is your positive feelings towards her. That is what creates the relationship to be growing and budding. But if you criticize, that's like taking the plug right out of the socket and then like singeing it with like making it fire, go on fire. It's dangerous. It's worse than any other relationship that you could go ahead and criticize. But any relationship, even amongst you guys, criticism is the worst thing that you could ever do. It's not going to get anywhere else to grow. Trust me, that's not the way to do it. Okay, so what do? If you see there's something wrong and you need to go ahead and you need to create this influence and you tried the other things already and it's not going, right? You set a Dvar Torah on the side and you acted a certain way and you need to tell the person. What do you do? Okay. So one common... Is it okay if we go 3 minutes late? You guys mind? Yeah? Okay. So one common response is called the sandwich compliment. Compliment sandwich. You heard of that? Compliment sandwich? You can look it up on the internet. And WikiHow tells you how to do it. Okay? It's the compliment sandwich. WikiHow. Ready? This is how you do it. Okay? Step one. Decide where the person needs to improve. Okay? Find out where do you need to help your business partner improve. Two, think of something related that he does well. For instance, if an employee is always late, try highlighting how he gets straight to work once he arrives, or how he volunteers to stay late. Three, choose another loosely related strength to remark on. Okay, now here you go. Four, deliver the first compliment. It's a sandwich, right? You can have a compliment, and the criticism in the middle. Deliver the first compliment. Hey, John, already hard at work? Wow, you just got here, and you're already hard at work. That's a compliment. Step five, state where you'd like to see the improvement. It's almost 9:50, though. You've been late a lot recently. Maybe you need to find a way to miss that morning traffic. And then you sandwich it with another compliment. Six, finish with the last compliment. Oh, by the way, your car looks fantastic. Okay, That's how WikiHow tells you how to do it. Now, the first thing is, this is a side point, if I was writing this would not be called the compliment sandwich, this would be called a criticism sandwich. For example, let's say you have a salami sandwich. So what does that mean? The salami is the thing in the middle, right? And then the buns are on the two sides. So here, the compliment sandwich is an incorrect title, because the criticism is in the middle of the two compliments. So it really should be the criticism sandwich. That's a side point. We could take it up with Wikipedia and figure out how to do it. Okay. But there's another reason why this is really, really bad. This is destructive, actually. A lot of people do this. First you say a nice compliment, then you go ahead and deliver the blow. It's very bad. Why? Because anyone that has half a brain knows that the first compliment that you gave was just a setup. Right? So you feel good for a second. Someone gave you a compliment, right? For 1 second you feel good, and then all of a sudden you realize why he said that. He didn't mean it. That's worse than anything that you can just... It's worse than giving the criticism straight. Okay? Softening a blow only works with people that can't think. Anyone who knows what just happened realizes that the whole thing was made up and it was all baloney, and you just went ahead and you gave him a criticism and everything else was fake. So that's worse. Okay. So if you have to go ahead and give criticism, this is what you should do. 6 steps. Okay? And if you really could go, you have to go through this checklist. Most of the time, 99.999% of the time, you will not be able to get through this checklist, and therefore you'll end up not giving the criticism. But if it has to happen, these are the 6 steps that you got to do. Okay? Step number one. Make sure most of what, we'll do it in the context of a wife, okay? Make sure most of what she's heard from you lately has been positive. Lately can mean that day, that week, etc. Only you know how much your wife or the other person that you're trying to criticize, influence, needs, okay? Everything that you said for the last week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks was only positive. You never gave any criticism. It was all positive. Okay, that's much more than a quick compliment and then delivering the blow, right? There's a significant amount of positive that's been there. Step two, make sure she has internalized and absorbed all that positivity, all that praise. You can tell by her mood, right? Sometimes you could say things, but they don't hear it. Did it make her feel good? Does she feel good about you? Does she feel good about the relationship? That is step two. So one is, you have to make sure that over X amount of time, and only you know what that time amount is, there's been constant positive praise. And step two is that you know, you can tell from her that she internalized that. Step three, choose your words carefully. Never on the spot. Take as long as you need. Okay? In the interim, you might even see that you don't need to criticize. Anytime you criticize on the spot, unless it's a tzelos nefashos, there's no reason to do it. And if it's a tzelos nefashos, you don't need this whole list. Okay? If you're saving someone's life, it's a different story. But if someone did something wrong, you don't have to tell them right now. You can tell them in a week from now. You can tell them in a month from now. You can tell them in a year from now. Okay? So you have to carefully choose the words that you're going to use when you say them to the person. Because don't forget, the only point of criticism is, don't mitzvah to criticize. The only time to criticize is that it's going to get you somewhere. There's going to be a value to it. It's going to be constructive. Constructive doesn't mean that as long as for you it feels good. It means that you actually need to get the other person to the next step. But if it's not going to work, then it doesn't help to criticize. It's only detrimental and hurtful to criticize. So the only way that you're going to be able to get that message across is if you carefully choose your words. Any extra word that you don't need, don't use. That might take time. You might have to write. You might have to think about it at night. You have to work it out. By the time that you finish figuring out what you're going to say, many times you're going to say, you know what? I don't have to tell them this. This is not so important. Okay? So carefully choose your words is step three. Step four. Okay, you've chosen your words. You're ready to go now. Don't raise your voice even slightly. Can't sound irritated. If it's coming because you're upset, it's not going to do anything. On the contrary, they're going to see that they upset you and it's going to be even worse. Step five, don't look angry. I mean, you can keep your tone down, right? But don't let your face, you can't wear it on your face. Don't look annoyed, resentful, disappointed. Oh, I love you. I just want to have an amazing marriage with you. I want to have a great relationship with you. By the way, I just want to let you know, last week when you called me a name, I know you're just joking. I don't like it so much. That's it. I'm not upset. Am I upset? No, I'm not upset. I chose my words. I don't care. It happened 3 weeks ago. I don't even remember it anymore. Just letting it up. She'll never do it again. Right? She made rice instead of potatoes. Don't tell her now. Tell her 3 weeks from now. When she makes the potatoes, say, whoa, potatoes is amazing. I even like it better than the rice that you made 3 weeks ago. Comes out on the side. You carefully chose your words. You're not upset. You're not even looking at her. You're not even talking to her. She's never going to make rice again. Okay? That's how it has to happen. You have to think about it, and you have to think about how to do it, when to do it. You're not wearing anything on your face. You're not irritated in your voice. You're not upset. The second someone senses, I'm sure everyone here in this room knows that one time when someone said something to them and made them feel uncomfortable, the second they feel that the person coming with an agenda, whatever, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It just causes fights. It causes ill feelings in between the people. Right? And the sixth is you remain calm. Okay? Meaning, even if you don't raise your voice, that was step four, and you don't look angry, that's step five, but you can't start getting all excited about it. Okay, you gotta stay calm the entire time. And the more that you wait, and the more that you let things just go, you'll realize what happened is not important. If it's not important, you're not even gonna say anything, but it's not that important. And you'll be able to stay calm with it because it's not internally in you. Those are the six steps that you must go through before ever criticizing anyone. Okay, again, I'm not talking about when something's an emergency right now, they're about to put someone's about to put a baby into a hot bath, Chas v'Shalom, it's going to burn them. Of course, you scream your head off then. We're not talking about that. Okay, we're talking about any criticism that you're trying to move the person forward so that things could be better, that person could be better, they might not even realize what happened. It never has to be on the spot. Ever. Ever. If you criticize on the spot, it's never going to work. Okay? You can write it as a letter, you can write it as an email, you can think about it later. And that's the only way that you could ever move people forward. Okay, so we spoke about over here, one is acting first the way that you want to influence. Two is looking at the person as good, completely good. That's the way to create that. Three, we spoke about the influence idea that you influence and it backs influence to you, it reflects back to you. And four, we spoke about the criticism, the compliment sandwich compliment, which doesn't work and only hurtful and destructive. And then we spoke about six steps in order to be able to make changes. But Be'ez Hashem will never need criticism. We'll always try to bring in good values into our home, into our relationships, and allow the person we have a relationship with to grow with us so we can become that wholesome unit. Amen.